Okay, good morning, everyone. Thank you all for joining. Let's see, we have committee member Ambersley, Williams, Lamb, and Gormany present. We're going to skip the investment report. So let's start with the approval of the minutes from our last meeting in March. Anyone would like to make a motion for that?
So moved.
I will second.
Okay. Motion was made by Heiklis and seconded by Mike. Any discussion? Okay. So we'll take the vote. Please say yes or no. Heiklis?
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
I am a yes. So that will pass. We'll go to the administrative matters. We have attorney Pamela Fleming here. I provided to everyone yesterday the draft of the amendment to the plan document with some notes that she had sent over in an email. So I hope everyone is able to take a look at that. Attorney Fleming was going to just discuss that a little bit further so we can either approve what she's presented or make some changes, you know, to then come back at the next meeting. Pam, did you have anything that you wanted to touch on first?
Just in connection with the amendment, I wanted to make sure that everybody is okay that it's drafted to allow a transfer to the 401, any City of New Haven 401A plan. Because I think we had originally discussed a 457B plan or a 403B plan, but when I did my research, it looks like the 457 regs do not allow such a transfer, and the 403B isn't quite as clear, but the guidance indicates that you can't do a plan-to-plan transfer to that as well.
So I think maybe the issue with that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think those in the Board of Ed, is their only option, Jessica, 403B?
The 403B or 457. Yeah, there's no 401A. We don't have one for them that I know of.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. There's no, only I think it's executive management has that. So I don't think that would even be accepted when I was looking further at that. I think all their options, like if somebody goes from the Board of Ed, say as a parent, and becomes a teacher, it's still the same. They only have the option of the 403B. Derek?
Yeah, just a question for you. Are you drafting, Attorney Fleming, that separation from the paraprofessional union is a separation of service and a qualifying event? Is that what you're adding?
No, I was doing plan to plan transfer because I don't think they're allowed to get, it's not a distributable event as long as they're still working with the City of New Haven.
Got it.
Yeah.
So, because that would be easier because we could do a 457 or a 403.
Or just an IRA rollover at that point.
Well, yeah, if it's distributable, they could do it to wherever they want. So that's probably why it wasn't in the plan originally, if they don't have a 401A plan.
Mm-hmm.
There are some options. I don't know how helpful they would be, but we could allow in-service distributions at, I think it's 59 and a half. But that would only help people that are older than that, who then could take a distribution.
Would they be able to take that in full or would it just be a partial?
They could take it all.
Okay.
I like that idea.
Does anyone else have any comments on that?
So if they're a teacher currently and they were a pair years ago and they have money in the plan, they can, if they're 59 and a half, they'll be allowed to transfer to get it distributed to them or to an IRA.
They have their choice. They could take a distribution, they could take a cash, they could roll it over, to IRA 457. Okay.
But this would be an amendment, right, that we would have to make first to the plan?
Yes.
Okay.
How about somebody who is still serving as a parent? They could still take it out at 59 and a half as well?
Yes.
So they could take it out and still be contributing?
Yes.
Okay.
So they would take, I don't understand that part, because they take a lump sum right now as a distribution. It's not like a one, like they can't do it multiple times. So if they were 59 and a half and wanted to take everything they had at that point, but are still working, we're sending in money for them every year. Are they going to try to get a distribution every year of what they put in? I don't understand that part.
Well, and we can draft it how you want, because at age 59 and a half, that's when the law allows active employees to take a distribution. But as the employer, you could say, well, we only want people to be able to take a distribution once a year. You could say, we only want them to be able to take, you can choose how you want to limit it, if you want to limit it.
So we could say they could be 59 and a half, but they have to either be resigning or transferring out as a para as an option. That could be an option. Like,
we could do it that it's only if they are transferring out of as a para. If they're resigning, there's no amendment needed. They can already
take it anyways. Yeah.
Right. Because we do have some, not only that become teachers, we have some that retire as or leave as a para, but stay as a part-time person. And because they're still employed, they can't take it out. So that would be helpful for those people.
So it sounds like you are thinking of limiting it to those that are no longer paras and those that go part-time. Do you want the completely and 59, the 59 and a half age is required by law. Anybody under that age can't take it.
Right.
So that's a given here.
Right. So at 59 and a half, if they are either an active teacher or an active para, they can take the money out. We can allow it once a year, or we can say only if they don't work in any other position again. I mean, if they continue to work for the other position and they're 59 and a half, they can still take it out part-time or full-time. Right.
Say that again, Jessica. I'm sorry.
They're not, once they reach 59 and a half, mm-hmm. If they're an active teacher, they can take the money out as a par of the para plan. Mm-hmm. And if they continue on as, if they retire as a para, they can continue working part-time, but they can take the money out if they're 59 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If they continue full-time, I was thinking if they continue full-time and want to take it at 59 and a half, to let them take it at 59 and a half, and then they can't take again until they exit. So they take that lump sum at 59 and a half, and then when they continue to contribute and take it, they can't take again until they separate.
Okay.
Whichever way they separate. So yeah. 59 and a half, you can take it if you want, or roll it over, and then you can't take again until you separate.
Right.
So your situation is if they continue as a para.
Yes.
Okay. I can see that. Did anyone else have any comments about this? Okay. Yes. Emily, you're on mute. Yep.
Do you mind if, I know I'm not a committee member. Is it appropriate if I ask a question at this time?
Yes, that's fine.
So I think what I'm wondering is how we can preserve maybe a para who's nearing retirement but wants to remain actively employed, preserve that person's ability to maybe take the money out at 59 and a half and move it to something more conservative. Obviously, there have been great returns on this plan, but if someone knows that they're going to need the money sooner, I would imagine that's the intent of the law allowing them to take disbursements at 59 and a half. So that's my only concern, Heiklis, about only allowing them one disbursement from 59 and a half until separation.
No, what I'm saying is, it's just what you're saying. It's just that they were saying, as Jessica was saying, they will still contribute to the plan, even though they took that lump sum. So do we want them to take that, their contribution every year after that, or just take it? So I'm saying, don't take it every year after that. It's going to be too much work. So let it take, so you could take it at 59 and a half, and if you continue to work, then you take it again when you separate. You take the remainder, whatever you contribute between 59 and a half and 70, whatever age you are, by then you take that at that age, when you separate, is what I'm
saying. Yeah, because for instance, if someone were to stay as a parent until, say, they're 70 years old, Mm-hmm. If they take it out at 59 and a half, then for another 10 years, they'd be reaching out every single year, grabbing whatever they it is that they put in each year. I agree that that might end up being too much.
Right.
Just,
and it's only $1,000 a year. It's not a huge amount, but it would be, they would be coming every year, I think. So that would be, I think that would be a good solution, what you said.
One thing, if I could just add, you might want to set up some sort of education for the paras, because just from a taxation standpoint, you know, Jess and my team have been working with this for a number of years. And a lot of times, I can't even tell you how many times we see distributions going into like a checking account, which then becomes a full taxable event for these folks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there should be at least some discussion about, hey, do you want to roll this over to an IRA so it's non-taxable? You know, I understand where they want to get their money and access to their money, but perhaps they need to be educated on what the best way to do it in a tax-efficient manner is. You know, in the years prior, you know, Wendy and I would come into the meetings every once in a while, every so often, and excuse me, whatever members were, you know, there and present, we would talk to them about this, but. I don't know if you guys want to set up something a little bit more formalized upon distribution, just because I hate to see everybody just, you know, they're walking out with 10,000, you know, giving up 25 or 30% to taxes if they don't necessarily need it. So just food for thought and maybe something we could address in the future.
So Derek, I think
at the union meeting, maybe.
Mm-hmm. I think what we can do, Derek, is kind of just, look at putting together like a one page memo based on whatever changes are. And I was going along the lines of what Leanna just said of giving it to Highcliffs and maybe they present it at the union meeting on just whatever the changes are to this plan document and how it impacts the okay. memo. I think that would be the best way to do it.
Okay.
Jess, yeah. On the application form they submit to you, does it have any verbiage on there? Because I know when we do like for, say, their for our the other plans, like COLA buyouts, for instance, there's a whole like tax and, you know, packet that goes along with it that explains like a rollover.
There's not much. I mean, there's a section for rollover information and some people do it, but. You know, they've been informed by their financial advisor or something. Somebody's told them about it. I don't think it really explains much on the paperwork.
Okay.
Perhaps we could get something like that and attach it to the application. Mm-hmm. So they're informed as to, you know, before they even take it out, that this is how it works. This is what happens. If you take it out and you put it in your bank account, you're going to be taxed heavily. Mm-hmm. If you roll it over into IRA or something else, you know,
okay.
Especially if you're under 59 and a half, you know, if you're
especially what,
if you're under 59 and a half, not only do you have the taxes, you also have a penalty, 10%.
No, they can't take it under 59 and a half. It has to be 59 and a half.
Even if they're separated from service.
Oh, they're separating from service. That's
yeah.
Yeah. That's good to do, to add that to it. In either cases.
Okay, so Pam, would you be able to, I guess, change this draft to what we discussed today?
Yes.
To add in the 59 and a half, whether they, you know, transfer to a different position with the city or stay as a para or go part-time. But if they stay as a para, they can only do the one-time withdrawal and then they can't take the rest until they actually leave employment. I think those are the changes we discussed.
Leave employment or leave as a para?
Yeah.
Because they can, if they leave as a para and still are part-time, that's okay.
Yep.
So let's see, at 59 and a half, anyone can take it. A one-time distribution, a one-time lump sum distribution. Mm-hmm. And then 59 and a half, if they leave para, they can get like another distribution?
No, if they stay as a para and they continue to contribute to the plan, mm-hmm. they can't take another distribution until they stop being a para.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Whether it's 2 months or 5 years, 10 years from then, whenever they stop contributing as a para, they can take the other distribution.
Is that included going to another position within the board?
No, but yeah, because they wouldn't be contributing as a para. They would be as a teacher or part-time or something else.
All right. So at 59 and a half, people can take a distribution, a one-time distribution, but then as if they become part-time or if they're no longer a para, then they can take another distribution.
Right. When they stop being a contributing para.
That would be the final distribution.
Yeah, that would be the final one.
Yes.
Now, these meetings are quarterly, and I know especially, you know, because the summer is approaching. So the next one probably would be at the start of the next school year in September. Would that be okay to have this finalized draft, hopefully for the board to review at that time and make a decision on potentially?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's okay with everyone. Okay. All right, then. I think was there any other comments or discussion on that item? Okay, thank you, Attorney Fleming, for that, for presenting and listening to us.
Oh, sorry. I think there was one other thing, but it wasn't exactly on the amendment, but it was on distributions. Did you want to talk about that? The annuities?
In your email?
Yeah.
Oh,
right. Let me pull that up, hold on. Which one was that on the email?
Number 5.
The plan provides that a participant may elect to receive benefits in the form of an annuity contract. May not have been aware of the annuity options, so we can discuss. I think we should review the forms provided. Jess, do you, because it discussed the forms provided to the participants when they elect a distribution, is there an option on there for annuities? I don't think so, right? It's a one-time.
I don't believe so. Let me go get it. Hold on.
Can someone explain this a little bit better for me? I don't understand it too well, about the annuities.
I'm happy to explain it.
Okay.
So the plan is drafted so that when somebody is entitled to a distribution, they have the option to elect an annuity payment. If they're married, it would be a joint and survivor annuity. If they're not married at the time, it would be a single, a life annuity. And I think this issue came up before because it sounded like people were not aware that the plan actually provided that option. So we want to just make sure that people have been given this opportunity so that the plan is actually administered in accordance with its terms. And if it has not been, we can do something to correct it. And because this is a governmental plan, I do not think it needs to maintain the annuities. If you don't want to keep them, I think it's okay to amend the plan to eliminate them on a going forward basis. But we should just figure out what has been done in the past and what you want to do in the future, because we could add that amendment to the one I'm currently drafting for the in-service distributions. And I mean, we could amend it so that we eliminate the annuity options if that's not something you want to continue.
If I may, I just add some outside color to this discussion. It's to me, you know, this plan was drafted in the early 90s, right?
Yes.
So the annuity discussion was very different then than it is now, just from a product standpoint. So I don't know where the city would go and just purchase an annuity for these folks. I mean, there are many, many, many annuities out there now with various insurance companies and various riders and nuanced little changes and tweaks to each. And they're very complex, typically very high fees. I don't know. I don't know that the board and or, you know, the city has any kind of ability to sit there and to say, okay, well, is a life period certain? I mean, who's going to do the actuarial work on that unless you hand it off to an insurance company? Now you're saying, okay, if you're handing that chunk of money to an insurance company, which insurance company? And then, oh, which rider? And what are the benefits and the features and benefits? I mean, when did I do this all day, every day with clients? And the discussion, the education process and timeline on annuities is extensive, to say the least. And quite honestly, they change so often. You know, we in our world have a tough time keeping track of all the different, you know, nuanced vehicles out there. So, you know, for what it's worth, I don't know how you would actually implement an annuity with period certain, joint survivor. I mean, those are all, you know, little gadgets and widgets on an annuity contract. So I don't know how you would even go about tackling that task.
And record keep it.
Yeah.
I also don't think it's ever been done, Jessica, as far
never.
As you.
Never that I know. I've known. Never. Never. No one's ever asked me for about it ever.
Yeah.
So I think it should, if it is there, I would suggest it be put in the new amendment to be taken out. That would be my suggestion.
And I would maybe in that little, with the one pager that Mike was talking about, you know, upon separation and or distribution, you know, maybe you can put a little piece in there like, hey, seek help of a financial advisor, because one option you may have is a stream of income for life through an annuity contract with your financial person, you know, whomever that may be. You know, obviously you don't want to eliminate that opportunity, but I don't think it's something that the board and or the city has a way to administer, just because, like I said, there are so many companies and complexities out there. So maybe in that one pager, just put, hey, there are financial, you know, financial products out there that allow you to, you know, quote unquote, get an annuity, because that's what would happen. Ultimately, they would roll that lump sum, however much it is, into an annuity contract with some insurance company, depending upon, you know, what their needs are. And if they have a spouse, do they want, you know, period certain, do they want, you know, spousal continuation, do they want market exposure? I mean, there's so many nuanced little pieces to them that I think that's really a full-time job for whomever these people hire as their financial advisor when they roll out. I mean, banks do them. So, I mean, they could get them at a bank, you know, insurance folks do them, you know, regular financial advisors like Wendy and I do that. So there's a lot of places where they can get access to annuities. Heiklas, what are your thoughts? Like, I don't think, I mean, your job is to protect your participants, obviously. So what do you think is the right thing to do?
I was wondering, if it's there, why was it not ever utilized? You know, I don't think people were aware of it, that they could utilize it. And if it's a benefit that is, it would give them a lifetime, give them something for life, I think a lot of people would prefer that, would like to be able to have that. But maybe we should table that and do some more research on that aspect of it before we make a decision on it, because I would like to understand a little bit more. And, you know, maybe we could do some research on it and see, you know, see what we can do. I don't want to make a decision on it today.
Attorney Fleming, I didn't read the contract or what, where you saw that. Does it give any more specifics about the annuities or how they're picked? Or?
It's, let me see. It's in the plan document, and it's section 10.3. And it just talks about qualified joint and 50% survivor annuity, qualified joint and 75% survivor annuity, or a life annuity if you're not married. That's all it says.
Leanna, can you send me that plan document? I don't know if I got it. If I was on the email, I don't know that I have it.
Yeah, I would like to have it too, please.
I think it's also posted on the website, but I'll do that after the meeting.
Yeah, I think I think that was an unknown benefit there.
On at least.
Okay, so maybe just move forward on the amendment part that we discussed about the 59 and a half. Mm-hmm. And we'll bring that up, you know, bring that up to the next meeting to potentially approve that portion of it. And then we can further discuss the annuity discussion at the next meeting as well.
Can I just ask another question, just because I'm trying to wrap my arms around this? So in the 403B plan, a lot of those providers are insurance companies. Are there, at which, you know, insurance companies create these annuity structures, do they have those options on their 403B? Do you folks know? Anybody?
I don't know.
I'm just trying to understand how you would ever implement this and why it would be in that document and how it would even, it just seems very counterintuitive, I guess is the word. So, but anyway, okay. I guess we'll have to figure that out.
Great. Was there anything else, Pam, that needed to be discussed?
No, thanks.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. The next item is the update. I know it was brought up, the investment fees coming out of the paraprofessional statements last month under new business, HICLIS.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any, I think, I'm not sure if Tom is still here because he said he was having issues, but I still see his name.
Yeah, he said he had to step out. He had some things to do, to attend to. But I think Mike was supposed to check on, Mike was supposed to do some research and bring us back some report, right?
So right now, this is basically the Raymond James fees we're discussing, right? How they're being taken out of the Paris statement instead of coming possibly directly from the Board of Ed.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
What does the plan document say? Does it say the city pays?
Or yeah. I think that's what we discussed was that it's the city, which would be the Board of Ed.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, you know, honestly, I think I forgot about this one. So I think if Derek, do we have the fees that have been paid since the beginning of the plan that have been charged to the paraprofessional plan?
Not since the beginning of time, no. You know, not since 91 or what have you. So I could at least get from December or maybe beginning of 2020 is when Raymond James started working with the plan. So I could somehow pull together a report on that from 2020 to present day.
And we pay the Board of Ed pays Raymond James and right separately. They pay a census.
Yeah, right. So all the other fees. Yeah. So every other fee, like so Attorney Fleming's fee is paid out from the board. You know, obviously all the other administrative expenses were paid, but not the investment management expense. So that's the expense that HICLIS was talking about that comes out in their census statements.
All right. Well, give me from 2020 and I will look into this for the I will certainly look into this for the next meeting. Let me discuss this with Mr. Lamb, and I'll probably have to discuss it with the Board of Ed CFO, Linda Hannons, as well, to see what we can do or, you know, see what plan I can develop in regards to these fees.
Sounds good. Okay, we'll move on to new business. Is there any other new business to discuss? Okay, I will just add that, again, our next quarterly meeting would be most likely sometime in September when everyone is back to school. So I will probably be reaching out maybe end of August or so to figure out a date for September that works for everybody. All right, so we can go to item one, which is the investment report. Derek, would you want me to bring in the two presenters and have them present first?
Yeah, I think so. Let's get them out of the way. So if you folks remember from the last meeting, we were talking about a census and some of the struggles we've all been collectively having with the census. Fine company, so they're the third party administrator, just to let everybody get up to speed. So their job typically is just to monitor account balances for all the different paras and also, do the annual reconciliation of the plan, get statements out to all the members on an annual basis. And like any organization, large organization, there's been representatives that have been working with the paras from some better than others. And so we've had some representatives that have been very attentive, and then we've had some that have been not so attentive. So I think there was an ask at the last meeting to see if there's any other firms out there that could do what a census does, hopefully in a better way, and is very much involved in this space. Let me also say, the structure of this plan is called a money purchase plan, and it's somewhat of an older type of plan. Not a lot of places still offer money purchase plans. So that what that does is limit the pool of folks, companies that actually do this work. So a census is one of the bigger ones. I was able to find a company that does do this, and they do it well, and they do it within, municipal accounts like this. So I did ask two representatives to come and present today, just to kind of tell you a little bit about their firm and what they do and how they do it. So they're in the waiting room, right, Lee?
Yes, I'm going to let them in now.
Okay. I think the firm is called NWPS.
And I'm sorry, do you need me to stay for this, or should I be leaving for this?
I don't think we will need you to stay, but
it's totally up to you. I just want to make sure.
No, I think we're all set.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pam.
So we have Tom O'Brien and Tim Lohr from NWPS. I've had some discussions offline with these guys about, the plan, how it works, how we, work with the trust company to get, tax reporting statements done, and kind of just the flow along between Jessica, Amber at our firm, and then us on the investment side. So they've been briefed. Kind of what a census does and how they do it, and very candidly where some of the missteps have happened. So with that said, Tim and Tom, welcome, and the floor is yours.
Thanks, Derek. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
All right, great. Derek, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Nice to see you all. Nice to meet you. As Derek said, my name is Tim Lohr. I represent NWPS in a sales and distribution capacity in the Northeast. I am based in the Boston area, but I am from Connecticut originally. I did spend the first 25 years of my life growing up there, so it's always, will always have a special place in my heart. And just a quick anecdote, when we go visit my folks, our kids always go bananas when we cross the Kew Bridge, obviously in New Haven, especially at night when the lights are on. We always play a game, who can guess what colors they are that evening? So I'd get a kick out of that. Simple things in life, I guess. And then on a professional note, I've been in the industry just over 14 years. Almost all that time has been in the retirement plan space. And joining me, as Derek said, Tom O'Brien. Tom is our vice president of sales. He's based in the Chicago area, and he's been in the industry about 30 years. Tom, would you like to say hello? Nice to meet you all. We appreciate.
Thank you.
There we go.
Nice to meet everybody. We'll try and keep this quick.
Yeah, we appreciate you giving us the opportunity to speak with you today. We want to be respectful of your time, so we'll just take the next couple of minutes to tell you a little bit about what it is that we do, what it would be like to work with us, and specifically why our clients trust us, why they stick with us, and also a little bit about our background as a firm, specifically as it relates to working within the governmental and public sector. And then if it's okay with you, if we have a couple of moments, we'd like to open it up to hear what you as a committee might have to say and what you'd like to accomplish, because frankly, that's the most important thing. All right, so just a little bit about us, NWPS. We've been in the business 28 years. We are headquartered in Seattle, Washington. Our East Coast operations is out of Baltimore, Maryland. But we have a presence all over the country. We work with over 425,000 plan participants, which spans some 1,100 clients, totaling approximately $45 billion in assets. And then of those totals, our presence in the governmental and public sector extends to over 17,000 participants and almost $2 billion in total assets. Culturally, philosophically, we're all about doing things right for our clients, and most importantly, taking something that is often complicated, often disruptive, and resource heavy for you, and streamlining it, and taking that stress and responsibility off of your workload. Our focus is on record keeping and providing the white glove service and support for our clients and their staff, and that's it. Unlike some of the other providers out there, we will never use your participant data to try and sell them anything. We want to do what's right for our clients. We strive to make the lives of our plan sponsors easy. And at the end of the day, our goal is to set our participants up for a dignified retirement. As Tom always likes to say, we answer the phone, what we do. So Derek, as Derek mentioned, he did provide some color around the plan as it stands today, and you know, specifically some of the issues that you've been dealing with. And we certainly have some ideas and some specific examples of where we can immediately help you, assuming, of course, you want to do those things. But before we do, we'd love to hear from you. We are certainly not a one-size-fits-all solution. We prefer to tailor our services to each of our clients. So it's important for us to hear what's on your mind as it relates to the plan today, and do what you can share and what you're looking to accomplish. So love to hear, love to open it up if that works for you.
Sure, I guess we can do that. So Jessica works with the Board of Ed. I think Jessica, really the major interactions on this side is between Jessica, Amber, and First State Trust. Is that a fair statement, Jess?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So Tim and Tom, you know, basically, I think we prefaced in an earlier discussion how this works. Basically, you know, how many participants are there? Do we know? I think it's like
500, I think, maybe.
500. Okay, so it's a pooled plan, and basically, you know, every participant up until potentially September at this point now moving forward, they can't take a distribution until they separate from service. That's a qualifying event. And they go to Jessica's office and or email or phone and say, hey, you know, we have these monies and we need to take them out. And Jessica fills out the distribution form, right?
They fill them out and send it in to me.
And we send it to Jess, and Jess passes it on to us.
The census first.
The census does the calculation. So the census is the one that actually monitors the calculation of what the balances are for the participants. They close the plan once a year, typically in the end of summer, to just do an evaluation. Jess, what are some of the issues and or struggles we've been having with the census?
Well, the first one was the customer service part of it. I mean, they won't talk to employees if employees have a question about something. And so that was a big problem for the employees. I mean, on my end, it's that they shut down. I mean, they don't do anything for the summer months. So we have employees who leave at the end of June. And because of the final year, the year-end valuation, it takes census a very long time. I mean, it could be sometimes they're waiting for stuff from us or the Board of Ed to complete the evaluation, but they don't handle any of the employees who are trying to get their funds. They don't handle anything until maybe September. We start submitting the paperwork. People are waiting sometimes for approvals for weeks and weeks. And it's frustrating because the employees call me and email me constantly and I feel bad. So, I mean, those are the main problems we have with them.
And then Hyklis, do you want to add anything? Because Hyklis is the president of the union. And I know Hyklis fields a lot of the concerns and, you know, the pain from the members, because I think there's a level of skepticism about the plan and where the monies are, because they're, you know, I think people get nervous when they go to Jessica and say, hey, I want to take my money out. And it happens to be July or August and the plan is quote unquote shut. And I think people panic, like, well, what do you mean I can't get my money out? I mean, would you say that's a fair statement, Hyklis?
Yes. Yeah, that's a fair statement. I know you mentioned, Tom, that you do record keeping, but you didn't mention customer service. And so that is one of our main issue is customer service. If I want to know the status of my plan, if there's an error on it, if I want to know what is the balance as of today, you know, I want to be able to get a hold of someone who can give me those information. And so that's a major issue for us when we don't get customer service from the bookkeepers or whoever has the account information. So I was wondering if your company provide that type of service.
We do provide that service. It is our expectation that all of your participants will have access to our call center. We're open 8 to 8 Eastern, and our average speed to answer, I say this because it's unusual, is 30 seconds or less. We don't make people go through a long voice response system to talk to a human being. That shouldn't be enough to be better in this business, but it turns out it is. And so we answer the phone. We know that when people are waiting to get their money or on hold for getting their money, they call often for obvious reasons, right? And so we learn about this. We say, okay, when somebody calls about their money and we say it's going to happen in 6 weeks, we can send them interim emails to say, here's what's happening in the process. You're still on track for getting your money at the end of the period or whatever the issue is, valuation of the plan. Communicating more information with people helps them feel secure in what your concern is. How much money do I have? And when am I going to get it? So we can provide visibility via the call center. And Derek, I don't know if we talked about, but even if the plan is valued annually, there's no reason it can't be available via web, right? Where people can log in and see their balance, right? Just to visit their money. There's nothing wrong with that. And it's easy for us to do. And so, you know, there are we would think of these as baby steps. You don't have to change anything on your plan design. We're going to have it on our system. We can include it on the web, and we will provide call center access for participant support.
Do you make the distributions throughout the summer months?
Well, the distribution question is often related to the valuation question. We'll make distributions at any time as allowed by the plan. So your plan is valued annually, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So some annually valued plans don't want people to take distributions in between valuation periods. But that's up to you. It's not up to us. We do distributions every day of the week, all year long. And it's only limitations on the plan or the plan sponsor that would cause us not to do that for a given plan. But it's not our decision. It's your decision on how and when to allow distributions.
So, Tom, that's an interesting statement because, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Jess, I think a census that applied this blackout period that nobody could touch their funds while they do the calculation. Was that your understanding, Jessica?
It was. I mean, they said, yeah, while the valuation's going on, I didn't know if it was our rule or theirs, but they just said, no, they don't allow it. How long would the valuation take once you had the information, the final information from the city and from Derek?
The information we need is the contributions, right? And the earnings.
Right.
As soon as we have the earnings from Derek, we post them to the individual accounts. And this is something we do on a daily basis for many of our defined contribution clients. So this is not going to be some manual spreadsheet 30-day process to allocate earnings once we know what they are.
So you get the statement from us and it's done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really know what took a census so long every summer. Again, it could be occasionally, sometimes they would wait for information from me or Derek for some, you know, one part of it, but we would get it to them and it would still take forever.
To your point, Jess, they never really even let us know, like, hey, we're waiting for consolidated statements. It's like,
right.
You or I would reach out like, hey, what's going on? And they're like, oh, well, we never got the statement. Well, okay, you never asked. And by the way, they all had like duplicate, they were on as interested parties. So they got the statements from us. So it was very bizarre.
And I also think, Jessica, the other aspect of support is support for you, right? So you're not going to call the call center. You are going to call the consultant who is assigned to the plan and responsible for the plan.
Right.
Right. And you'll know that person because we don't change them around. You have their phone number and email. Right. And so there's kind of there's a place for participants to go that is designed for them. And there's a person for you who's going to support you in whatever day-to-day challenges you have with respect to this plan.
Good.
So it is a, you know, it's a service model that it actually helps us, because if you answer the phone and take care of people on the first call, they don't have to call back 14 times to keep chasing an answer.
That's good.
It's a little bit odd, but that's how, you know, we've all been trained never to call a service provider by Comcast and others. And so when you answer the phone, people are surprised and they're happy. And if you answer their question on the first call, that's really good. And so, and these are not, you know, we know how to do this. We're doing it for our clients now. And we know that it costs us a little bit more to do it that way, but it pays off in terms of satisfaction and client retention.
So Tom, you know, I gave you kind of an overview of what a census charge is and how they work, and I think you guys were in the ballpark, obviously. Do you have some sort of ability to compare what they're charging versus what you would charge? And obviously, fees matter.
Yeah, certainly. If I recall, I think a census is at around between $18,000 and $19,000 a year for the services. It could be off a little bit. I'm not exactly sure. I think their basis for charging is strictly on the participant headcount. That would also be the case here. We don't charge on assets, we charge on headcount. And Tim, our fees came in around, was it 23 or 24,000?
Yeah, 24,000, but we were basing that on 600 participants. So if it is actually 500,
it's actually about four.
Oh, it's, yeah.
Yeah, it's actually about four.
I just four 20 or so. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that number will drop somewhat based on the lower headcount.
So can you give it per headcount estimate?
Yeah, I can do that for you right now. I'm redoing the math here with the updated headcount.
He's opening up his spreadsheet.
Yeah. Well, so the quarterly base fee is $1,750. That's static, right? So that's $7,000. And then on top of that, it's a $7.25 per quarter per head. 725 times the four is $29 a year times 400. We're at $11,600 plus the $7,000 base. We're at $18,600. We're right about where we are now today.
So that's where census is. So you basically the same fee, and by the sound of it, five times better service.
Well, yeah. I mean, yes.
I have one question, Tom. In your statement, I'm trying to make sure I heard you correctly. You were saying that each member would be able to go on the web page, going to have an account on the web page and be able to access their account and to see everything up there.
Yes.
See their statement balance, how much contribution they put in, just on a regular basis. They could do that at any time of the day. Is that what That's we're right. saying here?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I have a caveat to that, Tom.
Yeah, it's as of the previous June. It's still only going to be as of the previous June 30th.
Right, so it's going to be static,
right? Only do the valuation once a year, right?
So that would be a static number. So if the participant has $10,000 at the close of the year, they could check every single day. It's still going to say $10,000.
Correct.
Are contributions live? You know, the actual contributions that go on during the year?
Yeah, so as contributions come in, they will be posted to individual accounts, but no earnings will be posted because that's only done annually.
Okay.
Okay. So at least they could see that their money's going in That's correct. The earnings on it.
So right now the members have their pay, you know, 2% of their pay going in every pay cycle, but the board, I think, sends the contribution once a year, right, Jess?
Yes.
So it would be just their contributions be reflected.
Right.
But nonetheless, to Wendy's point, it does calculate that. So that's good.
Right. And it would show, like, you know, if I go in there today, I can look at the transaction history and I can see, oh, there was a board contribution on, you know, as of January 1 or whatever the date of the contribution was that went in, and they can see the amount, right? So they can drill into the transaction history on their account.
So I could get an estimate if, for example, I wanted to know what I have effective today. Mm-hmm. I could have an idea what it is based on last year's statement and the contribution that was made in January.
That's correct. And any subsequent contributions, I think, were we talking about monthly or each pay cycle?
I'm curious now in June,
yeah,
what my statement is going to be, you know, how much I have so far.
That will be updated each time there's money posted to the account. It will be the balance will be updated for the cash that went in.
So Tom, from an administrative standpoint, how do you get that feed? Are you tapped into the Raymond James Trust accounts, or how does that work?
No. So we will keep a balance on our system on kind of on cash, right? What was the last valuation plus cash? We also know exactly how much cash went to the Raymond James Trust.
But right? What about but every variable payroll contribution, you know, if some people earn X, another person earns Y, how will you decipher?
Yeah, so we know that because, well, to do that the way we would like to do it, we will need to get a payroll feed each time you pay people. Right.
Jess, how does that make you feel?
It's more work, but we'll have to do that. I mean, we do it now, I think, yearly.
Who is your payroll provider?
We do it in-house.
You're looking at her.
I mean, we're super flexible, right? To collaborate with you to figure out, is there an Excel spreadsheet you can drop out of your system that shows contributions by individual?
Okay. I think monthly would be more feasible. Only because there's certain times we have like a void payroll. We have to void someone's check for one reason or replace it or something. Yeah. And monthly would probably be best. So if we do a monthly report, yes.
I think these are things that we need to know, I guess, if we can do them, right? Because it limits what we can show. But exactly how we do them would be subject to further discussion on what you want to do and what you can do. Okay. You know, within the context of, you know, Jess only has so much time in a given day.
Right. Okay.
If we were to decide to switch over from a census, I mean, what would the process be to get everything? Because we've been with the census, for like over 30 years? Like, what would would it be a long process to get everything switched over, or how would that work?
This is usually, so everybody in our business experiences the transition of clients from one record keeper to another, including a census. We've worked with them on a number of takeovers, and it's a 90-day process. I'm going to put one caveat on that. You may have to check your contract with them to see what the notice clause is. It's rare to see something longer than 90 days, but it's worth checking. So we can get this done in 90 days, move from a census to NWPS, and we do this all the time.
Would you recommend we wait until the final valuation of a year, of a school year?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I know enough to answer it right now.
I think on our end, it would make it much easier.
Yeah. I don't have a strong feeling about it. I know, like with 401k plans that are all daily valued, we'll move them at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because of the nature of this plan, we may want to say, OK, let's do it at year end. And if that's your preference, we would definitely do it that way.
I think we might need Attorney Fleming to look at possibly, I don't know, the contract with the census, and if we move in this direction, a potential contract here, correct, before we even start any.
We can share, you know, what our agreement looks like.
Would we also need, I don't know, Tom, if would we need to incorporate the Board of Ed, since the Board of Ed would be paying them directly, or no?
I could talk to Linda Hannes about that, just to find out how the, because I don't know if there's a payroll element in the Board of Ed side that goes to our finance department or not. So I would just need to have some conversation about what that looks like.
Okay.
So since we meet quarterly, you know, conceptually, does it make sense to take a vote on, you know, in theory, if everything checks out, to hire a different, is that something the board wants to talk about once Tom and Tim drop off? Or, you know, obviously meeting every 90 days and there's a 90-day blackout, if we did decide to switch, you know, I think you could see how this could become a very long drawn out process. So I'm yielding to you folks, board members here. What do you think makes sense? I just know, you know, with SERF and PNF, you know, typically you take a vote and then work out all the logistics and legalese after and report back to the board typically.
I think we would need to potentially, yeah, take a vote on if we want to switch. I think we would need to take a vote to then can't either, you know, cancel a census and go to the new company. But I also do think we need to incorporate Attorney Fleming to make sure that we're following the current contract and then take a look at the new potential contract.
Right. Which is kind of like us sending it to Carolyn Cohn.
After a vote is made. Yeah. So it looks like it definitely wouldn't be able to be started anyways, probably just go until after the school year ends anyways.
Right. I mean, if we're going to vote on, you're going to vote on this now, or we're going to do this in the next meeting in September. I mean, we're going to start with the census in September. So it's going to probably be the following school year. No?
Well, I think just conceptually what we're saying is if, you know, if nobody else has any questions for Tim and Tom, maybe let them drop off and we could discuss, you know, amongst ourselves. But if you wanted to ultimately hire them, at least, you know, assuming everything checks out, right, make mm-hmm. the decision and then vote on it, yeah. start the process, and then ultimately, you know, hand it off to Attorney Fleming and the Board of Ed and, you know, obviously your office, and just at least start that process of going on. Obviously, nothing's binding. It's just been voted on.
Yeah. Jess, when did you say would be the easiest time to start or end, or
like after the final valuation is done and before we start sending the new school year stuff? So, you know, before start of school year in September.
I mean, I don't see why we couldn't do another meeting before the 3 months, or we could push it to August. I don't know.
A special meeting.
Yeah, if you guys were up to that, because, but
I mean,
yeah,
even if we agree in you know, if we meet in July and they agree, they need 90 days to implement. So we wouldn't start sending them money in September. Like, I don't see how this is.
Is that a hard 90 days, or is that a typical amount?
That's a great question, and I'm going to just say two things. One, this plan, compared to some other things we look at, is fairly straightforward. Okay, a lot less moving parts than many plans we work on, which means we can probably do this in less than 90 days. The second part is we could move this plan at any time during the year, right? You know, we're going to be taking the historical from a census of last year's valuation and how much money has come in for each individual since last year, right? So it's not very different from what we do on lots of other plans. So it could be moved pretty much at any time. I'm not suggesting that you want to do that. I'm just, so two things. One, it's simple enough, the plan, that I believe we could move it more quickly than 90 days. I would want to talk to our implementation people, but I think it's possible. And the second piece is, I don't think it's a huge burden for us to move it mid-year. I'm not suggesting that it's not a burden for you to move it mid-year. So those are maybe the last two things that we need to share so you guys can.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Tom and Tim.
Appreciate your presentation. Thank you all for joining.
Yeah, thank you all very much.
Thank you. Appreciate the time, everyone.
Okay.
We appreciate it. Bye.
Bye-bye, guys. So I guess, you know, obviously I would love to hear all of your feedback, but I think just from an administrative point, you know, Leanna and I have, and Wendy have a good amount of experience working with these type of transitions where, you know, like for example, with SURF, if we hire a money manager, it's the board agrees conceptually, yes, we like what they said, we want to hire them. And then the contract goes to review by the lawyers, you know, so the lawyers that represent you look at the contract, and obviously they'd have to look at the Ascensus contract per what Tom and Tim have said. And then obviously in coordination with Jess and Leanna and Board of Ed and, you know, Hyclus on a timeline, that's all variable. But for me, I'm just looking at it from a practicality standpoint. If you think conceptually you like what they said and everything checks out in your brain, like, you know, to me, I think it makes sense to have a vote and say, hey, let's at least examine moving forward. But that's just my, what they said was like music to my ears. So I don't, that's why I'm a little bit hesitant to wait. So. What do you folks think?
I think they were good. I like them. I like what they said. And I mean, it sounds like it's about the same price as a census.
Yeah. Just the fact that you can have a website, you know, that'll offload so much.
And that they contact people when they're waiting for the money. So they don't have to contact me constantly.
Right.
It's great.
Hyclus, what do you think?
I think what they're saying will certainly satisfy the concerns that members have. So I think they would be a good fit for us. I don't have an issue with switching. It's just the, I just want to make sure the logistics and the legality part of it is properly in place.
Right.
Otherwise, I would say, yay.
I think what we can do is probably, if you guys are comfortable, we could probably take a vote to potentially end the contract with Ascensus and then start a new contract with NWPS pending confirmation of both contracts, the old contract and the new contract. Right. So then if that's what the direction we vote on, then, you know, I can send an email after this to Attorney Fleming, giving her the heads up, asking her to check out the Ascensus contract to see if there's a clause in there. At the same time, if Derek maybe can reach out to the two present, you know, from NWPS and request, you know, a contract from them so that Attorney Fleming can look at that. Right. And then if there needs, there might not even need to be a special meeting, because if Attorney Fleming emails back and says there's no clause from Ascensus and we get the contract from, you know, it's kind of all done in the background between the contracts, between the lawyers and then whoever needs to sign off on it. You know, the actual final contract doesn't need to go back before the board because we've already voted on potentially accepting them. So, and then once it's signed, the transfer would just happen. So there might not even need to be another special meeting if we vote on that today. I think the only way we would need a special meeting is if Attorney Fleming finds an issue in one of the contracts.
We would need a full board agreement to vote.
You just need, I mean, there's three of us, which is a quorum based off of a 5-person committee. So we do not need everybody in attendance to make the vote, if that's what you're wondering.
I wish I wanted to get the input from Mr. Gormany at least to see what he thinks.
Okay. So you would want to not vote and put it off until September?
No, maybe we could call check with him. He wasn't here for the presentation at all.
I think that's a very good call.
Okay.
I definitely think Mike Gormany needs to be part of that decision process.
Okay. I mean, I don't think it would make sense to have them come present again. I can refer Mike to listening to the audio If you know that's what you wanted to do. And then what is it? So would you want to try to do a meeting, a special meeting in July next month, or
Or next week, or do we, you know, we don't have to wait. We don't have to wait a long time. Just give him the opportunity to weighing on it. That's all we need, I think.
Okay.
That would be fair.
Okay. So I'll reach out to Mike after this meeting then and provide the audio to him so that he can take a listen to it. Maybe in the meantime, I'll still give Attorney Fleming a heads up. I don't know if she would have a copy of the census contract. Jess, would you have that?
I think I sent it to you, Leanna.
The
email. It was in that email that I just sent this morning.
Today, this morning?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, then that would be okay if I'll send that to Attorney Fleming, and just so at least in the meantime, she can look up the census contract to see if there's any clause in there. All right. And then once I hear from Mike, I'll see his availability and reach out to everyone else about a special meeting.
Yeah. Do you think Attorney Fleming should listen to the presentation as well, just to give her a real.
I mean, I'm going to send her the contract. Mm. I don't know. I don't think she would need to listen because she doesn't have a potential vote in it, but, it'll be posted on the website at some point, so I can always have her listen to it because the audio will be on the website.
Okay.
Derek, was there anything to present further?
Not on this issue, no. I mean, I have a quarterly update on the performance of the fund.
Okay.
That I can burn through quickly if you'd like.
Sure.
I sent it
let me
send it,
let's pull that up.
Okay, perfect. If you want to just scroll down to I think page 3 or 4, maybe 4. So as everybody probably knows, right here, it's fine. Oh, go up one. Yeah, sorry. I didn't realize it was so quick. So page 2. Obviously the market has been in quite a tizzy lately between, there's a lot of factors at play here. You have the Federal Reserve raising rates. And the reason they're raising rates is because there's, very, very high inflation. And we all know that. I mean, when you look at the gas prices, you go to the grocery store, it's just inflation has been running very, very high. And initially the thoughts were, okay, this was a COVID situation. This is what they call transitory inflation, which means that it's not going to stick around very long. Well, transitory inflation became what they call sticky inflation. So now the Fed, the way they choke off inflation is raise rates, slow the economy down and kind of, dampen the effect of inflation. So that's what's been happening. And when interest rates go up, bond values go down. So you look at, okay, there's language in the marketplace about, a slowing economy, potential recession end of this year into first quarter of next year. The Fed is raising rates to choke off inflation. When rates go up, that slows the economy down. So stock equity prices have fallen quite a bit. And also because the Fed is raising rates, rates go up, bond values go down. So, you've probably heard me say before, there's eat well and there's sleep well investments. So the eat well are stock investments because they typically, you're an equity owner and they go up, and the sleep well are typically bonds, where you say, okay, well, we have a mix of stock and bonds. Well, when the Fed's raising rates, your sleep well portion valuations are going down as well. And this is felt across the country in every investment known to exist, with the exception of energy and some basic materials. Those are the only two sectors that are up. Everything else is in either bear market or correction territory. So we quantify bear market as down 20%. So there are some certain stock indices that are down 20%. And we also have some other indices that are in correction territory, which is down more than 10%. Invariably, every stock index and some bond indices, for that matter, are down, you know, 10 or 20 or 30%. So there's really nowhere to hide. Last year and every year prior for the last 5 years, this fund has gone up in value. But you can't go up in value without having some sort of risk. The nature of this fund is very, very risk averse. So every client we have across the country is down, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20%. And, you know, this fund for the quarter is down 4%. So that is, you know, the nature of what goes on here when you invest. But you can still see since inception of March of 2020 to March of 2022, this fund is compounded out at a just under 9.5% positive rate of return per year. That's not cumulative. That's a per year rate of return. So, you know, what goes up comes down. There's an ebb and flow in markets. This is the first time with this collective board that we had to sit here and talk about a negative market commentary. It's not our first time doing it, but it's our first collective time. But you can see the fund is still outpacing what it was if it were 100% in U.S. Treasuries. Even U.S. Treasuries are down. So if you could go to the next page, please, Leanna. Kind of just show you, you know, in the upper right-hand corner, you could kind of see the blue line. That's the account balance. So if you did nothing, if you just said, okay, here's the account balance and you're 100% uninvested in cash, that's the valuation of the, of, you know, contributions, you know, the board and the members. And the green line represents the growth of the assets. So even with, you know, the potential downturn, the fund is still net positive. It's, you know, there is still growth on the money. So the participants will still see a positive return thus far, above and beyond what it would be just with contributions. So, you know, it is a it's never fun to talk about losses, but they exist, and there's really, like I said, nowhere to hide during this situation. And I'll talk briefly about what we see moving forward. If you want to just scroll down, Leanna, to page, there's one other chart I want to talk about. Keep going. A little bit more. One more. I'm sorry. One more. I'm sorry. It's farther down than I thought it was. I apologize. Right here. Oh, up one. Up two. No. One more. There you go. So this just shows you. So I talked about annual returns. You know, I said this fund is compounded out 9.5% roughly per year for the last 2 years. This is cumulative on the right. So you can see this is all the inflows and outflows of the plan with market performance as well as, you know, investment performance. And you can look cumulatively, the fund is up just over 20%. So even with, you know, the first quarter of the year being a very negative marketplace, the fund is still up a little over 20% cumulatively, which is obviously pretty simple math. You say, okay, 2 years, you know, it's a little bit more than 9.5% per year. So, you know, we're not recommending any changes per se in the investment mix, unless you folks want to talk about that. I'll talk briefly about what's going on in the market and kind of what we see moving forward, because obviously looking in the rear view is one thing, but let's kind of talk about moving forward. Where do we see opportunity and or is there some relief in sight? And, you know, obviously we don't have a crystal ball. And a lot is depending upon the Fed, the Federal Reserve, the Fed chairman, what they do and how much they, you know, raise rates and what pace they raise rates and what it does to the economy. But let me just remind everybody. So we have two different things here. I'm talking about the economy, right? So that's what we hear about from the Federal Reserve. We talk about recessions, GDP. That's the economy of the country. But we're also right now speaking about finance. So finance and economics are not synonymous. They're not the same thing. In fact, you look at what happens in the stock market, 6 to 9 months in the future, it's predicting what's going to happen in the economy. So if you look at the upper right-hand corner, those are all the different stock indices that I'm talking about. Those are down, you know, significantly. And there's been a bounce. There's been about a 9% rally off of the lows of those different stock indices. So if you say, okay, this is all, we're feeling this pain now in your investment portfolios, but this is predictive of what's going to happen in the economy 6 to 9 months from now. So the market is a future discount of what's going to happen in the economy. So we're feeling it now in our investment portfolio. We're going to feel it in the economy typically 6 to 9 months from now. So which is why I said, you know, end of the year this year or early next year is when we're predicting some sort of potential recession. And when I say recession, recession is two consecutive quarters of negative GDP. So the gross domestic product has to shrink or contract for two consecutive quarters to be quote unquote classified as a recession. So there's a lot of talk about what the Fed's going to do. How much is he going to how much is he going to raise rates? How bad is it going to hurt in the economy? Well, it's going to be pretty significant. I mean, you look at a lot of these stock indices that are down 20 or 30%, that's going to be considerable pain in the economy, you know, end of the year, early next year. Where's the bright spot? Well, these returns are already factored into the stock market. So we say, okay, with the exception of two sectors, and that's energy and utilities, we all know energy prices at the pumps and gas and home heating oil and utilities are up. Every other sector is red. That's what that bottom right-hand chart shows. So there's some things when things are down. So Warren Buffett, one of the most famous investors in the world, always says, when people are greedy, be fearful. And when people are fearful, be greedy. And you can see now the fear index in the markets are pretty high because everybody is concerned that their asset prices are going down, their retirement accounts are down, people get nervous. And the behavioral aspect of finance is inherently to do the wrong thing almost 100% of the time. And what do I mean by that? Okay, well, everybody looks at their accounts and they say, okay, I'm losing money. Everybody's losing money around me. I want to sell. I want to sell everything and panic and run for the door and save whatever money I have. Well, inherently, that's the worst thing to do because what you're doing is you're selling when things are low. Conversely, when everybody's making money, everybody's talking to each other in the grocery store and, oh, we're making money and the markets are good, things feel good. That's when people want to buy. Typically, the emotional component there is, oh, wow, everybody's making money. I need to invest in stocks because everybody's making money. Well, inherently, that's the worst thing to do because you're buying high. And then when things sell, you're panicking and you're selling low. So the nature of investing long-term and boards like this are better because you take a little bit of an emotional aspect out of it because we're making decisions as a board and as, you know, a group of people. And you say, okay, we can take the emotional pain of one account, my single account, off the table and say, okay, we understand big picture. We understand these are retirement accounts and we understand that we're diversified and we're investing for the long term. So that said, we think that the worst, I don't want to asterisk here, the worst financial, you know, investment world of the investment market is, we think, either at where we are now or behind us. Because like I said, just recently, we from March to May was the worst financial pullback we've had in probably 5 or 6 years, but it's already come back 9% from that. So you see a lot of these numbers are already starting to come back. Now, I don't think it's going to be a straight up. Obviously, there's a lot of information that needs to be digested by the market. But now companies' valuation. So what did this do? So now stocks that are being depreciated by 20 or 30% now become very appealing to investors. And just think of the biggest technology stocks out there. Everybody knows Amazon. Everybody knows Facebook. Everybody knows Google. Those stocks were very, very high priced a bit ago. Now they've just gone on sale by 30%. It's like, okay, there's a 30% sale on good quality companies that will entice folks, investors, to go and start buying. So all you need for stocks to go up is more buyers than sellers. When stocks go down, you have more sellers than buyers. So we think collectively as a team, as an investment team, that investors are starting to come back to stocks and starting to invest and recognize the values that are in the stock market. So not overly concerned at this point in time. We think ultimately the worst is behind us. We think we will start to be selectively watching stocks go up from here. And, you know, we don't recommend changing at this point because that inherently would be the wrong thing to do. If we say, okay, we want to get more conservative because stocks are down, that's the last thing you should do, in our opinion. So I know I threw a lot out there and I said a lot. I just want to make sure that everybody understood what I said and can digest what I said and certainly open it up for any questions. Any questions? Okay. So
then you said it all. I think you summed it up. Thank you.
Okay, great. I'm glad that I was able to kind of talk through this. So in September, we will, you know, obviously present another report. Hopefully we'll be up again, but we'll see. And that's all I have for you folks today. And that said, enjoy your summer, certainly.
Thank you. Thank you, Derek.
Thank you.
All right, then. Let me just pull this up. I think that brings us to, we have, stop the sharing. Here we go. That we've covered all the items on our agenda.
So just Leanna, just so I'm clear, NWPS, you're going to have Mike Gormany review that.
Yeah,
or do you guys have to have a vote or?
I will contact Mike and Lisa, have them listen to the audio from the presenters, and then
you could do like a phone vote or something.
I think we have to call a special meeting to do the vote. Probably we have SURF and PNF coming up. So, but hopefully once they listen to it within the next couple of weeks, I'll figure out a date.
Okay. Just let me know so I could communicate with them.
To do a special meeting to vote on it. And I'm going to email Attorney Fleming though today to ask her to look at the Ascensus contract. So we'll have an answer about that hopefully at the special meeting too. If there's any clause in there that says X, Y, and Z of how to end a potential contract with them.
Okay. Sounds good. So I'll just wait and follow your lead.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sounds good.
Okay. If there's nothing further from anyone, then we can take a motion to adjourn the meeting.
All right. Just one thing. So yep. Derek, you're going to have the new company send the agreement over to the attorney also, right? So she can review both of them, compare them or review them or no?
It's up to you.
Yeah, eventually that will need to be done. I don't know if they'll want to do that before a vote is actually made in case the vote doesn't go in their favor. I think we would have to vote on it saying, yes, we want to end with the census and start with them before I would assume their company would want to send any agreement to our attorney.
Okay.
All right. Can we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay. And is there a second? Tom, second. Okay. Everyone, thank you so much for attending. And I'll be in touch as soon as possible.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye. Have a nice day.
You too.